What in particular was this panel interested in hearing from you yesterday?
Well, they were particularly interested, Francis, in trying to figure out what are the kinds of constraints that make it hard for small businesses in particular to be able to do business with the Defense Department.
Small businesses are defined as what in the context of doing business with the government and DOD, because there is some confusion about that sometimes.
Well, it varies depending on what the nature of the work is. If it's small consulting firms, then you're talking size of money. If it's manufacturing firms, you're talking about numbers of people. So small businesses, $5 or $6 million for doing consulting services kinds of things, for example.
You mentioned in your testimony that there are three critical elements that are not necessarily difficult. Operation should be sufficiently transparent, selection process fair and free from bias and conflicts of interest, competition should be the norm. Now, as an outside observer, those seem like that they should be pretty simple and upfront. Are those concepts that kind of get lost in the shuffle sometimes?
Well, they're the concepts that everybody would like to see in any kind of a good procurement system. One of the problems that you run into is there becomes a lot of pressure to try to get things done. People look to ways to kind of cut corners in order to do things more quickly. A lot of the problems have been with staff imbalances, lots of money in the defense world, for example. We saw increases in defense funding going for 10 years or so around 122%, staff increases of about 20%, and so a lot of the effort gets dealt with trying to deal with the front end of the process, not so much looking at how well people are doing. And these constraints make it more difficult, I think, for the process to work smoothly.
Now, you referred in your testimony and answered some questions from some of the members about a topic that you and I have talked about on a number of occasions, and that's the acquisition workforce. We've spoken about it before more broadly, but in reference to the Defense Department acquisition workforce, what impact is potentially going to happen as a result of what the DOD is going to go through budget-wise, do you think?
I think this is going to be a real problem, and one of the points that I tried to make to the committee is as these budgets get cut back, there's going to be efforts to cut back on people as well. And given the importance of getting good contractor support, it's important that the department really pay attention to seeing that they've still got enough people to do the job, and people not only in terms of numbers but also in terms of skill sets and competencies. One of the points that I raised, Francis, was a concern that the department looked to be shifting to contracting techniques that really don't make a lot of sense in terms of how you're buying sophisticated procurements. They're doing something, this is a little bit of a technical jargon kind of point, but they're moving towards something called the lowest price technically acceptable approach. Well, this is great for commodities when you're buying things where everybody's pretty much doing the same thing and you can go low price. But when you're dealing with sophisticated procurements, a lot of complexity, there you really want to have a good look at what can people bring to the table that's beyond the bare minimum. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of good enough for government work. That's really not what the government ought to be doing. And when you push this low price effort to an extreme, then that also prevents small businesses who just can't deal with these kinds of low prices to be able to participate to get into the marketplace.
Whenever I mention LPTA to Jack Gansler, he always has the most colorful response to that concept. He always says you wouldn't choose your dentist based on lowest price technically acceptable.
That's well put. And Jack had raised issues about some other parts of the department doing it. I'd raised issues about the Navy going down that path for their next generation enterprise contract, so the NMCI follow-on. So I do think this is something that people really have to be careful about going down that path. And one of the reasons they're doing this, Francis, is in some respects they think it's an easier evaluation process and they're less likely to get in trouble in an evaluation because it's simpler to do. And that's really not a good reason to be looking at that approach.
Yeah, that last reason, Al, is the one that I seem to hear from industry a lot, the reason that it is their viewpoint about why a procurement officer will choose LPTA is just, if I know if I do it that way, I won't get in trouble.
it's a little safer.
Yeah. That's one of the four main issues that you addressed before this panel yesterday. We've talked about the workload and the contractor procurement workforce, acquisition workforce. One of the things that you addressed, too, is the communication between government and industry. And your successor, Dan Gordon, created Mythbusters for that purpose. And you addressed that in your testimony. One of the fears that people are having about Mythbusters is now that Dan is no longer at OFPP, that Mythbusters will kind of fade as someone else comes in. It might be Joe Jordan, and he'll have his agenda and he'll have his priorities, and understandably so, he should. But there are a lot of folks in industry that are concerned that Mythbusters might disappear. What should happen, do you think, to make sure that at least the concepts contained therein that you're talking to this panel about continue to be top of mind for people?
Well, I frankly think, Francis, that the OFPP folks are very strongly supportive of this idea of getting that word out on trying to improve communications. And I'm sure that that will be something that Joe Jordan would be continuing to pay attention to, because it makes so much sense to get good results for both industry and government to get that communications going. One of the things that I mentioned in the hearing was when we first started out at Jefferson, it really benefited us to get good debriefings from people to really tell us what we were doing well, what we weren't doing well, and it enabled us to really do a lot better in subsequent procurements. I mean, it's an advantage to industry, for example, and just something as simple as that.
What did you take away from this experience yesterday, Al? Questions that the members asked you that you were surprised to hear, or areas that they placed a heavier emphasis on than others, or anything like that?
Well, I know the chairman was asking, are there some ways that we can do this, do the streamlining, get the results, make sure that the process is working well by allowing more self-regulation and having the government impose more constraints on people? And I said there are a couple of things that are already being used that way. The protest process, to a degree, is a self-regulatory effort, because it's one company complaining about another or complaining about the process. So there are certainly some ways that can be done. I think that there are some benefits in going down that path. I mentioned Angela Stiles' defense industry initiative is another way where companies try to put together do's and don'ts for themselves. And so there is some of these kinds of things, and I think it's a good idea if we can look at that to do. And one of the telling questions was from Congresswoman Hanabusa from Hawaii, who said, you know, you've got all these smart procurement people around, and we've been looking at these problems for so many years. Why haven't we solved it? And it's a good question.